The Loretta Woman is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour. In the Elgin, Texas, today is April the 11th, 2023, or it is April 21, 27. We will start our first service today on this solemn assembly. This is the coming feast of the unleavened bread. And this calls for a sanctification of the congregation. And we're going to do our first song.
Just when I need him most. Just when I need him, Joshua is near. Just when I falter, just when I fear, ready to help me, ready to cheer. Just when I need him most, just when I need him most, just when I need him most, Joshua is near to comfort and cheer. Just when I need him most, just when I need him, Joshua is true, never forsaking all the way through, living for burden, pleasures of you. Just when I need him most, just when I need him most, just when I need him most, Joshua is near to comfort and cheer. Just when I need him most, just when I need him, Joshua is strong. Maybe my burdens all the day long, for all my sorrow, giving a song. Just when I need him most, just when I need him most, just when I need him most, Joshua is near to comfort and cheer. Just when I need him most, just when I need him, he is my home. Answering when upon him I call, tenderly waiting lest I should fall. Just when I need him most, just when I need him most, just when I need him most, Joshua is there to comfort and cheer. Just when I need him most.
Let's just title the sermon, When Yahweh's People Are Delivered. We're on the 13th symbolic code, number 1, and to be number 2 also to go with it. So we're going to start on page 3 of this here's symbolic code, 13. It says, this study was given by V.T. Hall of April the 3rd, 1943, and June the 15th, 1945. So V.T. Hollis, he got caught speeding there. So he had to do his sermon again within 2 years after he did it the first time, because prophecy had unfolded more clearly to him. Let's find out what it was all about. It says, our study for this afternoon is based on the texts that are somewhat scattered throughout the Bible. It is, in the reality, a review of the studies we have had the last several weeks. Or you might say that it is a conclusion of them. Well, you remember through our study of the 11th chapter of Daniel, and Isaiah chapter 7 and 8 and onward, they bring to view a war and the deliverance of the Yahweh's people in a time of the great distress. That is a point that I am to emphasize this afternoon. We will read 1 Zechariah 1:18-19. It says, "Then lifted up I mine eyes and saw, and behold four horns, and I said unto the angel that talked with me, What be these? And he answered me, These are the horns of which have scattered Judah," that's the house of David, or the tribe of Judah, or the lawgiver. And Yahshua has to be the head of the tribe of Judah in order for it to be the lawgiver, and that's in Genesis 49:10. "And have scattered Judah. Israel is your 10 tribes in the north. When the kingdom of Solomon was subjugated after his death, 10 tribes went north. Samaria was their headquarters, and 2 tribes, Judah and Benjamin, stayed south in Jerusalem." And it says in Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the capital of Judah. And that's where the ministers live. That's the reason why it's separated Judah, Israel, and Memphis, and Jerusalem. Judah is the country that's called the hill country of Judea, where the laity lives out in the hills. The leaders live up in Jerusalem, and Israel are the 10 tribes. Okay, "For the prophet saw 4 horns, and the angel that talked with him made him to understand that these horns were symbolical of the Gentile nation which had scattered Judah, the 2 tribe kingdom, and Israel, the 10 tribe kingdom." Okay, so the Assyria that invaded the 10 tribes in the north, Nebuchadnezzar came down south and invaded Judah 121 years after the 10 tribe kingdom went into captivity in the north. And then Nebuchadnezzar comes down out of Babylon, and he takes the good workers and the smart people out of Israel. And he left all the halt, the maimed, and the blind back home. He didn't even bother to take them into captivity. He just told them, just keep on existing down in Jerusalem. Okay, it says, "The capital city of the 10 of the 2 tribes of kingdom Judah." Let's read that again. It says, "For the prophet saw 4 horns, and the angel that talked with him made him to understand that these horns were symbolical of the Gentile nations." So that, pay close attention to that. The Gentile nations are blood-kin brethren to the Hebrew Israelites. So now keep that in mind too now. They just have Egyptian mothers. Those Gentiles, they just have Egyptian mothers that start them off. Whereas Hebrew Israelites, they had Hebrew mothers and fathers. But those Gentiles, they had Egyptian mothers, but they had a Hebrew father. Now keep that in mind. All the Gentiles that are classified Gentiles had Hebrew fathers, but their mothers were Egyptian. Alright, this is, okay, so that's enough of that. Let's go on down to Zechariah 1:20-21. "And Yahshua showed me 4 carpenters." Now look at this. Other people say Lord means the Father Yahweh, but no. Yahshua is the one that's dealing with all the prophets, because that was his assignment. When Adam and Eve sinned, Yahweh assigned his son to deal with the fulfillment and unfolding of prophecies and the making of prophecies. And Yahshua showed me 4 of the 4 carpenters. Then said I, what come these to do? And he spake, saying, these are the horns which have scattered Judah, so that no man did lift up his head. But these are come to fray them, to cast out the horns of the Gentiles, which lifted up their horn over the land of the Jews for the scattering it. Okay. The correct reading would be, which lifted up their horn over the land of the Jews for the scattering of the people and the land of Judah. That takes the place of that one little pronoun, it. You have a better clarification of what it's talking about. For the prophet first saw four horns that perfectly symbolized those Gentile nations that scattered Yahweh's people. For the horns are used for the pushing and scattering. Afterwards, though, he saw four carpenters, thus lending the impression that they have come for the building, for that is the business of the carpenters. When the prophet saw the carpenters, he wanted to know the purpose of their presence. In his answer, the angel first told him that these carpenters are none other than the four horns, Gentile nation, that had scattered Israel, Judah, and Jerusalem. And these same horns that scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem have now returned as carpenters for the casting out of the Gentiles and thus freeing Yahweh's people. Pay attention now, because this is where we're at right now in prophecy. We're right there now at that very place. They can't take much more over in Jerusalem today of that. They've got an ongoing war right now in Jerusalem. And the scripture says in Zechariah 14, that says, Judah also fights at Jerusalem. And I'm looking for us here to get completely well right here. And somewhere in the near future, I may have to go to Jerusalem to lead that army of David. And then I may not. Maybe Yahweh will go ahead and Yahshua will probably take over the command there himself, since he's already there, actually, and lead Judah to defeat that. And I'm sure he will, because it says in Zechariah 14:5, it says he said before that happens, that war happens, as he says, Yahweh, Yahshua shall come and all the saints with him. Zechariah 14:5. So he's going to be there with all the saints when that war breaks out, for real. All right, let's keep on going here. He said, for the prophets, first saw four horns, which perfectly symbolized Gentile nations were scattered Yahweh's people. For the horns are used for the pushing and scattering. I think I've already read this. Okay, afterwards though, he saw four carpenters, thus giving the impression that they have come for the building, for that is the business of the carpenters. When the prophet saw the carpenters, he wanted to know the purpose of their presence, and in his answer, the angel first told him that these carpenters are none other than the four horns, the Gentile nations, which have scattered Israel, Judah, and Jerusalem, and these same horns that have scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem have now returned as carpenters for the casting out of the Gentiles, and thus free Yahweh's people. If therefore becomes obvious that the four horns, which the Zechariah first saw, point back unto the time when Israel and Judah were scattered. And the symbolism of the four carpenters must point forward unto a time years later when Yahweh is to restore. Actually, that is Yahshua, not the Father, but it should be Yahshua, the Son, is to restore and rebuild the kingdom. Because when you go to Acts chapter 1, verse 6, where the disciples ask Yahshua, they ask, they say, Master, have you come to restore the kingdom of David? And he said, it's not in my power to do that. It's in the Father's power. So he said, I can't tell you. But the disciples put that to him. They knew that he was going to come one day and restore the kingdom of David. And so here's right here in Zechariah, to restore and to reveal the kingdom. Briefly then, the symbolism of the horns looks back unto the destruction of the kingdom, whereas the other, the carpenters, look forward unto the repairing of it. For the question we ought next to consider is whether the fulfillment of the work of the carpenters took place in the time when the Jews returned from Babylon after their 70-year captivity, or whether it refers into some other time, for you remember that the Jews were scattered and their land was taken and they went into the captivity under the Babylon. Here's another word we're going to have to delete, this under Babylon. They went into the captivity with Babylon, with the Babylon, not under the Babylon. They went with the Babylon. For the 70 years of Jeremiah's prophecy, after which they returned and the city was rebuilt. Okay. For the Zechariah says there were four horns which would include all the nations that had a part in the scattering of the Yahweh's people. And moreover, if this prediction met its fulfillment in the Nehemiah and Haggai's time, all the Gentiles should have been driven out forever. But they were not. Besides the horns were those nations that scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem, and now they have returned to free them and to repair the kingdom. And in chapter 2 of Zechariah's prophecy, Yahweh declared, for the Yahshua, the Son, declared that not only would his people's kingdom be restored — there's that word restored, you always connect that to Yahshua and his kingdom — but many nations would join themselves unto the Yahshua, since both Israel and Judah did not return, and since other nations did not join themselves unto the Yahshua and his people. When the Jews returned from the Babylon, we cannot say that this prophecy met its fulfillment in the return of the Jews from Babylon. Now remember, when they returned, under Cyrus, but Cyrus come and delivered them out of Babylonian captivity. That a lot of Jews stayed back there. They intermarried with the Babylonians and they stayed there. Other Jews fled down into Egypt. Only about 50,000 went back to rebuild Jerusalem. A bunch of them went down into Egypt. A bunch of them stayed home in Babylon. And since these prophecies has never been fulfilled, it must take place at some future time. Now in Colossians chapter 1, Paul is talking to those Colossian Gentiles. Now look at this. He's saying in verse 12, giving thanks unto the Father, which hath made us meet to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in light. And who were the saints? That was the Jews. Whoever accepted Yahshua of the Jews, they were called saints. And he's telling the Gentiles, you are to be partakers of the inheritance. Same thing as Isaiah 56 says. Who hath delivered us, verse 13, who hath delivered us, and that us is a pronoun, meaning Jews and Gentiles together. See? Who hath delivered us, Jews and Gentiles together, from the power of the darkness, and has translated us into the kingdom of his dear Son. Now Paul is telling those Colossian Gentiles, we've been translated into the kingdom of his dear Son. Well, what is translation? In whom we have redemption, verse 14, in whom we have redemption through his blood, even the forgiveness of sin. So boy, he's telling his Gentiles. So that's what I said about Ephesians 1. Verse about 18. For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but unto us that are saved is the power of Yahweh unto salvation. Well, for the preaching of the cross is to them foolishness that perish foolishness. Those that perish is foolishness. Because they don't accept the blood. Now, I just read to you about having redemption through his blood. They wouldn't accept it. So they perished. Okay, so I'm going to ask the question, what's the difference in the translation being translated into the kingdom of his dear Son and being translated into the kingdom of heaven here on earth? Alright? Let's go look at Luke 1:17 through 20. Let's go look at Luke 1:17 through 20. Let's see if we can't learn something there. Well, sometimes these things are worth looking at in a different, from the Bible's perspective, especially. In Luke 1:17 it says, and he shall go before, and he shall go before him in the spirit and power of the Elijah, for the turning of the hearts of the fathers unto the children, and the disobedient unto the wisdom of the just, to make ready a people prepared for the I may have my numbers confused here. That's a good scripture. Let's go to Luke 17. Let's go to Luke 17, 19 and 20. Let's see what we got there. Okay, it says Luke 17, and it says in verse 20, Luke 17:20, and when he was demanded of the Pharisees when the kingdom of the Yahweh should come, he answered them and said, for the kingdom of the Yahweh cometh not with the observation, neither shall they say, lo here, or lo there. For behold, the kingdom of the Yahweh is within you. So when you accept the sanctuary and you keep all the statutes and judgments of the sanctuary and the Passover, more preferably, where you have the foot washing and the emblems of the wine representing his blood and the emblems representing his body broken, then it says, then the kingdom of Yahweh is within you. You automatically have the kingdom within you. So you're translated into the kingdom of his dear Son here on earth. When you accept the truth in the blood, when you're redeemed by the blood, you're automatically translated into his kingdom. And when you partake of these emblems and so forth, the kingdom of Yahweh is certainly within you. Okay. Let us go ahead then now. Let's turn to Isaiah 11 right quick. I want to read you something right here.
Isaiah 11.
Isaiah 11, verse 1 through 6. And there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse. Jesse, in the symbolism, that's Isaiah 11, 1, is the Seventh-day Adventist Church today is represented by Jesse, the father of David. And a rod is... that come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse. The rod is the rod of David. David the rod. And a branch shall grow out of his roots. Well, Yahshua is the branch. Okay. And the spirit of the Yahshua shall rest upon him. The spirit of the wisdom and understanding. The spirit of the counsel and might. The spirit of the knowledge and of the fear of the Yahshua. And shall make him of the quick understanding and the fear of the Yahshua. And he shall not judge after the sight of his eyes, neither reprove after the hearing of his ears, but with righteousness shall he judge the poor. So who is this leader of the kingdom in these last days? He has to become righteous himself, or he can't be the leader. And how does he judge the poor? With righteousness. And reprove with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked. And righteousness shall be the girdle at his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reins. For the wolf also shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall eat them. And the cow and the bear, verse 7, shall feed their young ones, shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. And the sucking child shall play on the hole of the ass, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the cockatrice then. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountains. That holy mountain is the mountain of David. That's that little stone hewn out of the mountain without hands. And Daniel 2, verse 44 and 45, 34 and 35, 44 and 45. And so he says, they're not going to hurt nor destroy. This is right here in the 12th hour when all this is restored to sit up with all these animals and all these people. This is right here in this probationary time. But the Adventists, when they get to that verse 6, or the vision, they get to that verse 6, they say, oh, this is in the earth made new. Oh, this is all prophecy being fulfilled in the earth. No, it's not. Prophecies are fulfilled in this time. No prophecy is fulfilled in heaven after this earth is over. All the prophecies in this book has to be fulfilled before probation closes. And Vivek Yadavpani didn't understand that when he wrote some things out there in the rod. But that's okay. He did a good job. He did a good job what he had to deal with. Jeremiah 30, verse 46. And these are the words that the Yahshua spake concerning Israel and concerning Judah. For thus saith the Yahshua, we have heard the voice of the trembling, of the fear, and not of the peace. Ask ye now, and see whether a man doth travail with the child. Wherefore do I see every man with his hands on his loins, as a woman in the travail, and all faces are turned into the paleness? We heard a noise of the trembling of fear, and not of the peace. Okay, it says, we do not have to ask whether a man travails with child, for we know that he does not. What then is the reason for the suggesting of the question, for it indicates that something is to happen that never happened before. It will be something as strange as if a man were to travail with a child, a time of the great and unusual trouble, and fear is to overtake the people. It is to bring great distress and anxiety upon them. Isn't that where we're at today? I've never seen anything more real in my life, the way the world is today. Jeremiah 30, verse 7. Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is even the time of the Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. Now, isn't this amazing? This he is a pronoun for a singular term. It's a subject matter of somebody that is antithetical to Israel. That he. He said, that he shall be saved up. That's a singular pronoun for a singular person. And it's talking about Jacob, antithetical Jacob. Well, who is antithetical Jacob today, then? It would be of Judah, and it would be the one that is the lawgiver. It would be his antithetical David. Actually, it would be his antithetical Elijah, of Malachi 4 and 5. That's who this is really talking about. And this antithetical Elijah is none other but antithetical David. And that's who we are. That he shall be saved out of it. Though it is designated as a time of the Jacob's trouble, yet there is no trouble like it in the respect that none is so great. And this prophecy Yahweh is revealing that before the Yahweh's people return unto their father's land, that's Yahshua's land actually, and this prophecy Yahshua the Son is revealing that before the Yahshua's people return unto their father's land, there shall be a time of the trouble that will turn all the faces pale. It will be a time of the trembling, of the fear, and of the trouble such as never was. Trouble is coming. It is not going to be a small trouble. Why is it called the time of Jacob's trouble? It says Jacob met his trouble while he was returning to the promised land from the land of Mesopotamia of his kinsman's house and Laban, an uncle to Jacob. Laban was the brother to Jacob's mother, Rebekah. Okay, and so Jacob had to flee for his life from Esau for 20 years after he deceived him out of his birthright. He spent 20 years in Mesopotamia and across the border, across the Euphrates. He had to go over to his uncle's house and live there for 20 years. But he gained the 12 patriarchs that represents the 12 tribes of Israel. He gained 4 wives, he gained servants, and he gave thousands of head of cattle. He became very rich. He went there with nothing. He came back with everything. So it says, now Jacob is to return again unto the promised land with all his household. And again he is to meet with the great trouble. That is why it is called the time of Jacob's trouble. The trouble is to be exceedingly great. Well, it was pretty bad. He had Laban coming in, chasing him behind him to intercept him, bring him back home to Laban's house. He had Esau coming with 400 men to meet him to keep him from crossing that river Euphrates into the promised land, back to his father's house. And it was nothing but warfare. Laban was coming armed behind him to repossess his cattle and his family, his two daughters when he caught up with Jacob, he said, "These are my people. These are my daughters. These are my children. These are my cattle. All this is mine." Jacob says, "No, it's not. You changed my salary 10 times in the last 6 years." And says, "If Yahweh hadn't interceded, you'd have driven me out of there with nothing. Mm-hmm. Back to my father's house." Mm-hmm. And so Jacob wrestled with the angel all night. And he got the victory, and the angel fought his battles for him. He, by entering into the hearts of Esau, Yahweh he gave Esau a vision, he gave Laban a vision, he said, don't you hurt him, you speak good to him, you treat him nice. So Yahweh interceded, and they all had to do it Jacob's way and clear the way, and Jacob went right on into the land of Israel. So I said, I don't care what you all do, I ain't letting this truth go. I found a pearl of great price, and I ain't letting it go. Alright. It says, through the, this most difficult time, it says, some of us may think we have hardships now, but the fact is that we do not know what hardship is. We cannot now comprehend or even imagine how great the trouble will be. Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is even the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. So all of those that are Jacobites that have joined the house of Jacob, they're going to be saved out of it. The sixth one, and Daniel 12:1 says, Michael stands up to deliver saints. This shall be a time of trouble like there never was since there was a nation. Even at that same time. He says, Yahweh's people that's found written in the Lamb's Book of Life is going to be delivered at that time. So, the most important thing to do is get your name written in the Lamb's Book of Life, and when that time comes, you're guaranteed deliverance. You don't have to worry about it. That's my hope. Mm-hmm. Or it says that the time actually is what saves him. No, the trouble actually is what saves him. Then the time of trouble is coming for the good of the Latter-day Jacobites. And here we are. It is coming for the delivering them through this most difficult time. It is the man who has the greatest faith in the Yahweh that will fear the least. The more faith one has, then the greater will be his deliverance. The more faith you have, the greater will be your deliverance.
That's right.
We have learned that in that great time of the trouble, those represented by the Jacob will be delivered. Daniel calls it a time of the trouble such as never was, and he also foretells that the Michael, Michael probably chapter 4, shall stand up and deliver everyone whose name is written in the book. Why did both prophets write about it? Jeremiah perhaps deals more directly with the deliverance of the people and makes plain the time that Yahweh is to accomplish the deliverance. Let's see what Jeremiah has to say. Jeremiah 30:8. For it shall come to pass in that day, saith the Yahshua of the host, that I will break his yoke from off thy neck and will burst thy bonds, and strangers shall no more serve themselves of him. For the breaking one's yoke and bonds means to make one free. It's from the Assyrian yoke that Jacob is going to be made free. And where was Mesopotamia? When Jacob went to spend 20 years with Laban, his kinsman, it was in Assyria. Okay. Jeremiah 30:9. But they shall serve the Assyria there, King, and David their shall serve the Yahshua their Redeemer, and David their King, and I'll put it, an antithetical David, their King, whom I will raise up unto them. Okay. Now we will read the last part of Jeremiah 30:8 again. And strangers shall no more serve themselves of him. For the reason there will be no strangers is that no one will serve himself there. In the religious realm, strangers serve themselves rather than the Yahshua and their king. But in the kingdom, all will serve the Yahshua, their Redeemer, and the antithetical David, their king. If I am a minister of the gospel, teaching of the the plan of the salvation of the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews 10, verse 19 and 20-21. What I can get out of it, then I am serving none but myself. But if I am serving for the good of Yahweh's people, then I am serving Yahweh. There are many people today dying for their country. Should not a Christian be willing to die, if necessary, for the cause of the Yahshua? There shall be no more stranger among Jacob that will serve themselves, but they shall serve Yahshua their Savior, their Redeemer, and antithetical David their King, whom I will raise up unto them. And what does it say in Jeremiah 23:5? I will raise unto David a righteous branch. Okay, I'm sorry. I will raise unto David a righteous branch. What's that righteous branch? That's a kingdom of people. And that righteous branch is the 144,000. There are two principles brought to the light in this statement. One is religious and the other is civil. For the one religious is none other than the Yahshua, the Redeemer, and the one civil leader is the antithetical David their king. If he is to raise David unto them, then it must be that they are going to have a theocratic form of government as they had in the Davis time. I'm glad I came to that theocratic government. Read that again now. It says, there are two principles brought to the light in this statement. One is religious, and the other is civil. Well, that's the reason why the Catholics call themselves Christian during the Dark Ages. They took over the civil governments of all nations, and then they took over all the churches of all nations. Mm-hmm. They said, you're going to all come and worship under one banner, and that's the Catholic banner. But we're going to use your doctrine, this Jesus Christ man that you all believe in, we're going to use his doctrine to be the embodiment of our basic belief as a Catholic. That will make us, instead of being called Imperial Pagan Rome, we throw off that identity and we take on the identity as Christian Evangelical. They become church and state. Mm-hmm. And then our government today says, we can't have church and state together. They interpret it right backwards. Okay, it says that the one religious is none other than the Yahshua, their Redeemer, by his blood, and the one civil is by the David, antithetical David, their king. And incidentally, when you put Yahshua, their Redeemer, and you put him with David, what was David's flag? It was a banner. Says so there in Psalms 60, 61. And it says the banner over us is love. Anyway, David has a flag with a lion on it, a symbol of the lion is on it, and the star of David. And it's called an ensign. The lion represents Yahshua, and the star represents David. And this is the seventh flag that's going to fly over Texas. Texas has had six flags. This is the seventh one that's going to fly over Texas. I just read it to you. Okay, it says, in Jeremiah 30, verse 10, it says, therefore fear thou not, O my servant Jacob, said to Yahshua, neither be dismayed, O Israel, for lo, I will save thee from afar, and thy seed from the land of their captivity. And Jacob shall return and shall be in rest and be quiet, and none shall make him afraid. incidentally, Jacob's going to be resurrected. And it's talking about literally a real Jacob here. This is a real Jacob of old. And if you don't think so, let's just turn and read it there in Matthew 8, verse 11. Let's go read it. It says there in Matthew 8, it says, And I say unto you that many shall come from the east and the west and shall sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of the heaven. Verse 12. But the children of the kingdom shall be cast out into the outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. Let's continue reading. Last paragraph on page 12. It says, Jacob should not fear because he shall be saved out of his trouble. For the Lord is going to deliver him by a miracle. If it were not a fearfully troubled time, they would not need to be told to fear not, nor be dismayed. It is to be a terrible time of the trouble just before Jacob is delivered. Certainly then, the statement that there is a silver lining behind every cloud is true in this case. I wrote a song one time that had that silver lining in it. And the earth made new where the skies are blue and the clouds are silver lined. For people speak when spoken to, that their love is not defined by what they do or what they say or how they comb their hair, but how they treat each other. I'll be looking for you there. Earth made new where the skies are blue. Okay, it says, Jeremiah 30, verse 11, 13. For I am with thee, saith Yahshua, for the saving thee, though I make a full end of all nations, whether I have scattered thee, yet will I not make a full end of thee, but I will correct thee in a measure, and will not leave thee altogether unpunished. For thus saith Yahshua, thy bruise is incurable, and thy wound is grievous. There is none to plead thy cause, that thou mayest be bound up. Thou hast no healing medicine. Yahweh's people are to receive punishment, but it is only going to be in measure. For the incurable bruise and grievous wound is that the kingdom is lost. Though the bruise is incurable, yet they are to be delivered. Only a miracle can heal an incurable bruise. Just before Yahweh's people are delivered, they will be painfully aware that there is no possible way for them to be delivered. But a miracle is to take place, then all will know that Yahweh alone wrought their deliverance. I wrote another song entitled Miracles. It says, Yahweh's full of miracles, surprises are no less, and blessings that come in disguise filled with happiness. Open up your heart today, let the sun shine in. A happy camper is the one who has Yahweh as his friend. Okay, Jeremiah 30, verse 14 and 15. All thy lovers have forgotten thee. They seek thee not, for I have wounded thee with the wound of an enemy, with the chastisement of a cruel one, for the multitude of thine iniquity, because thy sins were increased. Why criest thou for thine affliction? Thy sorrow is incurable for the multitude of thine iniquity, because thy sins were increased. I have done these things unto thee. Yahweh's people suffered the loss of their kingdom because of their sins. Jeremiah 30, verse 16. Therefore all they that devour thee shall be devoured, and all the thine adversaries, every one of them shall go into the captivity. And they that spoil thee shall be spoiled, and all that prey upon thee will I give for a prey. This is to begin to be fulfilled when the time of the Gentiles is fulfilled. And this is right now, going on. Jeremiah 30, verse 17, for I will restore health unto thee. And there's my promise. I have health problems right now. But Yahweh has promised me that he's going to restore my health unto me. And I'll depend on this promise. And I will heal thee of thy wounds, saith Yahshua. because they call thee an outcast, saying, this is Zion. And I was given the title to this movement and this church. We actually have a movement. And we're the fifth group of laborers there in Matthew 20, verse 6. That's called at the 11th hour. That's who we are, the house of David, the fifth group of laborers. We are a movement. The Adventist Church was a movement in 1844. Well, we are a movement since 2003 from Kermit, Texas. Whom no man seeketh after, for the adversaries will make sport of the Zion, because apparently no one will be looking after them, and they will have no following or friends, no one to plead their cause. Jeremiah 30, verse 18. Thus saith Yahshua, behold, I will bring again the captivity of Jacob's tents, and have mercy on his dwelling places, and the city shall be builded upon her own heap, and the palace shall remain after the manner thereof. So Jerusalem is going to be destroyed over there. And the Zechariah 14 war. But it says, when those just carpenters come in, those Gentiles come in to drive out those bad Gentiles, said they are going to build the temple. They're going to build Jerusalem themselves. Yahweh has commissioned them to do that. They're going to completely build up all of that Jerusalem over there. After it's all torn up, and the city shall be rebuilt, and the palace shall remain. Jeremiah 30, verse 19, and out of them shall proceed thanksgiving, and the voice of them that make merry, and I will multiply them. And they shall not be few, I will also glorify them, and they shall not be small. They are going to multiply and be a great people. Jeremiah 30, verse 20. For their children also shall be as aforetime, and their congregation shall be established before me, and I will punish all that oppress them. Their oppressors are still there. Jeremiah 30, verse 21. And their nobles shall be of themselves, and their governor shall proceed from the midst of them. That means their king, and cause him to draw near, and he shall approach unto me. For who is this that engaged his heart to approach unto me, saith Yahweh, our Yahshua the Son. For the nobles shall not be of the Gentiles, for they shall have their own government. For the nobles shall not be of the Gentiles, for they shall have their own government. So the Gentiles are going to have their own government. And who is going to reign over them? Antichrist David. And watch this. Jeremiah 30, verse 22-24. And ye shall be my people, and I will be your Yahweh. Behold, the whirlwind of the Yahshua goeth forth with the fury. A continuing whirlwind, it shall fall with pain upon the head of the wicked. The fierce anger of the Yahshua shall not return until he have done it, and until he have performed the intents of his heart. In the latter days you shall consider it. To find what the whirlwind in, let us turn to Jeremiah 25:15-18. For thus saith Yahshua, Redeemer of the Israel, unto me, take the wine cup of this fury at my hand, and cause all the nations unto whom I send thee to drink it, and they shall drink and be moved, and be mad because of the sword that I will send among them. Then took I the cup of the Yahshua's hand, and made all the nations to drink, unto whom the Yahshua had sent me, to wit, Jerusalem, and the cities of Judah, and the kings thereof, and the princes thereof, to make them a desolation, and an astonishment, and hissing, and a curse as it is this day. it made Judah a curse. Jerusalem is first among the nations to take this curse. Jeremiah 25:19. Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and his servants, and his princes, and all his people. Egypt was next. It says in Jeremiah 25:20-29, and all the mingled people, and all the kings of the land of us, and all the kings of the land of the Philistines, and Ashkelon, and Gaza, and Ekron, and the remnant of Ashdod, Edom, and Moab, and the children of Ammon, and all the kings of Tyrus, and all the kings of Zidon, and the kings of the isles which are beyond the sea, Dedan, and Tema, and Buz, and all that are in the utmost corners, and all the kings of Arabia, all the kings of the mingled people that dwell in the desert, and all the kings of Zimri, and all the kings of Elam, and all the kings of the Medes, and all the kings of the north, far and near, one with another, and all the kingdoms of the worlds, of the world which are upon the face of the earth, and the king of Shishak shall drink after them. Therefore, thou shalt say unto them, thus saith the Yahshua the host, the Redeemer of Israel. Or you can say the King of Israel, that's fine. Or the Redeemer or the Emancipator. Drink ye and be drunken, and spew and fall and rise no more, because of the sword which I will send among you. And it shall be, if they refuse to take the cup at thine hand to drink, then shalt thou say unto them, thus saith Yahshua the host. And when it says host, it's talking about the son. You shall certainly drink, for lo, I begin to bring evil on the city which is called by my name, that's Jerusalem. Should you be utterly unpunished, you shall not be unpunished. For I will call for a sword upon all the inhabitants of the earth, saith Yahshua the host. For Yahshua here declares that he commenced his punishment with his own people, and he is not going to excuse other people from the punishment. All the nations unto whom he sent it were to drink of the curse, and what he did to punish his people is a sample of what he will do unto the nations, because he will not allow them to go unpunished. Jeremiah 25:30-31. Therefore prophesy thou against them all these words, and say unto them, for the Yahshua shall rear from on high and utter his voice from his holy habitation. He shall mightily rest a rear upon his habitation. He shall give a shout as they that tread the grapes. Again, all the inhabitants of the earth, as noise shall come even unto the ends of the earth. For Yahshua hath a controversy with the nation. He will plead with all flesh. He will give them that are wicked unto the sword, saith Yahshua. For the wicked will be destroyed. Jeremiah 25:32. Thus saith Yahshua the host, behold, evil shall go forth from the nation to nation, and a great whirlwind shall be raised up from the coast of the earth. Earth in prophecy is the United States. And a whirlwind is going to be raised up. And I can read you about George Washington's vision that talks about this very thing. I don't have time on this tape, but anyway, evil will go forth from nation to nation, for Yahweh will call for a sword upon all the inhabitants of the earth. It means war. Now, folks, this is where we're at right now. There's no way of turning back from this war that is being made up right now here in the United States. There is no, every day it's intensifying more and more until there is no stopping it. There's going to be, George Washington's war is fixing to take place, And when I get through with this study here, I'm going to read that and put that on tape, George Washington's vision. You're going to like that. Well, it says, Jeremiah 25:33, "And the slain of the Yashir shall be at that day from one end of the earth," that's the United States, "even unto the other end of the earth. They shall not be lamented, neither gathered, nor buried. They shall be dung upon the ground." It says, this verse is not describing the conditions that will prevail as a result of the coming of the brightness of the Yashir when he comes in the clouds. That'd be 1 Thessalonians 4:16. This is a slaughter from the great whirlwind of the Jeremiah 25:32. It is from war. And that's war. We're in the beginning of this war right now in the United States. Why should the Yashir first bring this on Judah, that the lawgiver, the tribe of David, the tribe that David and Yashir comes from, and Jerusalem, and then unto the nation? Because they had the greatest light, and therefore they had the least reason to be wicked. Then, when this war starts in the time of the deliverance of Yahweh's people, the most enlightened people will suffer first. That would be the Seventh-day Adventists. Please return now to Jeremiah 30:23. "Behold, the whirlwind of the Yashir goeth forth with a fury, a continuing whirlwind. It shall fall with pain upon the head of the wicked." This whirlwind is warfare, folks, which does not arrive and then quickly die out. It stays long. It is the start in the latter end of the time of Yahweh's people, when Yahweh's people are scattered among the Gentiles, just before his people are delivered. And that's in Daniel 12:1. Michael, in the day, time of trouble, Michael shall stand up and deliver his people, everyone whose name is found written in the book, in his book, Jeremiah 31:1. "At the same time, saith Yeshua, will I be the king of all the families of Israel." Let's do that again. "I will be the redeemer," or the emancipator, or the savior, "of all the families of the Israel." I like to use that word redeemer because it says in Revelation 5:9-11, he says, "He redeems all nations of the earth by his blood, those that are saved, and they shall be my people. For the people that were left of the sword found grace in the wilderness." And the wilderness of people in prophecy in Revelation 17 is the United States. "The Gentile world," showing that the sword fell while the people were still in the Gentile nation. And the United States is definitely a Gentile nation. "Those that were left will be restored in their own land." It is in the time when the true ones in Israel are left and find grace with the Yashir. Well, it says God here. Okay. "Find grace with the Father Yahweh." Jeremiah 31:3-4. "For the Yashir hath appeared of old unto me, saying, Yea, I have loved thee with an everlasting love, therefore with loving kindness have I drawn thee. Again I will build thee, and thou shalt be built, O virgin of Israel." And there's only one people that virgin applies to, and that's the 10 virgins, the 5 wise and the 5 foolish, and the 144,000. They're the only 2 classes of people in the Bible that are referred to as virgins. "Thou shalt again be adorned with thy tabrets, and shalt go forth in the dances of them that make merry." She will again be a kingdom as she once was. Jeremiah 31:5. "Thou shalt yet plant vines upon the mountains of Samaria. The planters shall plant, and shall sit them as eat them as common things. For there shall be a day that the watchman upon the Mount Ephraim shall cry, Arise ye, and let us go up unto Zion, unto the Yashir, our Redeemer." Judah is in Zion. That's the reason why Yahweh told me to call. That's called as Mount Zion at the 12th hour. Adventist Church was called Mount Zion at the 10th hour. 1844, it is called Mount Zion at the 11th hour. 1970, 2003, we're called Mount Zion at the 12th hour. Ephraim refers unto the kingdom of Israel as the 10-tribe kingdom. Therefore, the day is coming that Ephraim will go unto Judah, the 2-tribe kingdom, and Zion, Jerusalem, unto the Yeshua, the Redeemer, their Savior. Jeremiah 31:7. For thus saith Yeshua, sang with the gladness for Jacob, and shout among the chief of the nations, publish ye, praise ye, and say, O Yeshua, save thy people, the remnant of Israel. There are people yet to be saved. This brings in about Stephen Shaw contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11, click on our audio archive. We're going to close now.